I as a leader feel supported so that I can support my team who is doing the work, who then can, they can then go and support their clients who are needing them to support them. So it's a trickle-down effect in terms of how everyone feels supported. If you don't feel supported in your job, you're going to probably not have your whole heart in the work. And so feeling like you have someone back at the ranch, so to speak, who cares about you, makes you feel psychologically safe, and who is there for you, allows our staff to be able to go out and do the work.
Inform, educate, advocate. This is your source for all things early childhood. From nurturing healthy development to overcoming behavioral challenges and recognizing mental health needs. Welcome to Centering Kids, advice from the experts at the Florida Center for Early Childhood. After a particularly stressful week, I attended a Zoom call with coworkers. Before the meeting got started, a simple question was asked. What was the hardest part of your job this week? The responses were shocking. One woman had lost her mother and was having trouble focusing on her daily tasks. Another client lost their infant baby to SIDS, and their whole team was devastated. After hearing these responses, suddenly my job didn't feel so stressful. Suddenly, the emails I sent that went unanswered didn't seem that important, and suddenly I wanted to go above and beyond to make my coworkers' lives a little easier that week. Hi, this is Centering Kids, advice from the experts at the Florida Center for Early Childhood. And today we are discussing how businesses and organizations can create a culture of care for their staff. My guest today is Dr. Christy Skoglund, CEO of the Florida Center and licensed mental health counselor. Thank you for joining us, Christy.
Hey, Mira. Thanks for having me today.
So Christy became the Florida Center CEO 2 years ago during the height of the COVID pandemic. During her short tenure, a major hurricane damaged two of the center's campuses. That's a lot to go through in a short time, Christy.
Absolutely. It wasn't easy coming in 2020 and then experiencing everything that we have had to go through in the past 3 years. So, you know, coming in and experiencing COVID and the hurricane, you know, all of that meant we needed to really think about what our staff needed, but also what our clients were going through. So it was kind of multi-pronged, and compassion and sympathy was something we really had to lean into. In the midst of the COVID pandemic, we were also transitioning to telehealth or the virtual world like everyone else. And that was quite a journey to kind of transition and figure all of that out, in addition to our staff working from home and the virtual world that we find ourselves in now, where some things can be done from home and they can be done virtually. So navigating all of that was certainly a developmental process for leadership.
What do you think the hardest part of that process was?
I think how we balance the needs of staff, clients, and the organization. Balancing all of that, because trying to make sound leadership decisions and trying to discern what was the most priority. You know, I know intuitively that we can't help clients if we don't have staff that feels supported. And the human capital we have here at the organization is critically important and probably the most important thing that we have. And so we had to make sure that our staff felt supported and had what they need to be able to do their job and support clients.
And I remember a lot of the staff feeling fearful. Fearful just to come into the office. Were there positions that could not work from home, and how did you support those?
So there were, you know, we had to kind of figure that out. What could be done virtually? What needed to happen in person? And of course, there were times, especially during the first 3 to 6 months of the pandemic, where a lot couldn't be done in person. Staff were afraid of obviously getting COVID, and we didn't really know a whole lot about it. And so making sure that staff felt safe and psychologically safe and also physically safe to do their job was something we had to figure out. And it wasn't an easy thing. It didn't happen overnight. It was just something we processed together. I rely heavily on other leaders within the organization to help brainstorm and guide me, quite frankly, because, you know, while I'm supposed to lead the organization, I don't have all of the answers. So I need a team of people around me that I trust and who I believe have sound wisdom in their thinking to really help guide decision-making process.
Or we still have two preschools that we run. And at the time, most daycares were shut down and you had to kind of do some adjustments with the preschool. Can you give us a little bit of information about that?
Yeah. So we definitely answered the call in the community when we heard that there were first responders, frontline workers that needed to get back to their jobs, but they needed somewhere for their children to go, their young children to go. And so we were able to open our preschool. You know, we had to limit our capacity to about 50% what we're licensed to have. And so we made the decision to do that. And there were all sorts of health precautions and safety precautions that we put in place, you know, all of the masks and the gloves and that sort of thing that we felt was necessary and certainly relied on guidance from our national health experts to help us make those decisions.
Very interesting. And you also brought in an expert on trauma-informed leadership. Can you tell us a little bit about the training with Dr. Ebert and how did you decide who would go through that training?
Yeah, so Dr. Ebert is a licensed psychologist and associate professor of clinical psychiatry at Vanderbilt University. But what's most important about Dr. Ebert is that he is a certified trainer in treating trauma, stress in children and in youth. And so we felt that he was an excellent candidate to help guide our team. He also has expertise in organizations and how to build trauma-informed leaders. So we determined that we would bring in our leadership from the what we call our senior leadership, our directors and above, and bring them in to, and actually our supervisors were also involved in Dr. Ebert's training or consultation efforts, and we were able to not only have large group discussions as a full leadership team, but also bring in the individual departments because we have, you know, several departments focusing on different areas of early childhood. And so our teams were able to get very specific guidance related to their specific job duties and maybe some of the unique nuances of challenges within their departments.
And that story that I shared at the beginning of the podcast was actually a Dr. Ebert meeting, and that was one of the questions that he asked during that meeting. What other steps did you take in developing an empathetic and inclusive company culture?
A lot of it was really talking about the trauma-informed care practices and really reflective practice and the concept of the parallel process and helping we think of trauma-informed care as something that is very mental healthy or clinical and everyone, and we had to first help others understand that it's something that doesn't matter what your job is. It's something that everyone should understand. And so helping our staff understand and our leaders understand that it's a way of being. It's not clinical training that's required. It's just understanding that we have to first take an inventory of ourselves, understand what we bring to the table, our biases, our thoughts, our way of thinking about people and problems that are brought to us and how we respond to those. So really having a heavy infusion of trauma-informed care understanding and then understanding what the parallel process means, which is extremely important for leaders. And the parallel process is essentially making sure that I as a leader feel supported so that I can support my team who is doing the work, who then can, they can then go and support their clients who are needing them to support them. So it's a trickle down effect in terms of how everyone feels supported. If you don't feel supported in your job, you're going to probably not have your whole heart in the work. And so feeling like you have someone at back at the ranch, so to speak, who cares about you, makes you feel psychologically safe, and who is there for you, allows our staff to be able to go out and do the work and feel supported in the work that they do. And then the effect is that clients feel like they have someone who truly cares about them and supports them.
That's a really nice philosophy and just practice. Was there anything from that training that really stuck out to you or that you found like the most valuable?
I think just having having an infusion of those of the concepts of parallel process, trauma-informed care, reflective practice, having all of that, a heavy infusion of that within our leadership, because it really does start at the top with our leaders. So having a heavy infusion of that within our leadership team, a lot of our staff actually felt like they got a lot from the process. I mean, each of our supervisors were interviewed. Each of the directors were interviewed and asked what they felt they gained from the process. Some said that they loved that it focused on boundaries and within the team and their clients. Some really resonated with the concept of the Alicia Gopnik's book, The Carpenter and the Gardener, which talks about how carpenters, you know, build and shape something into what they want it to be, and gardeners kind of nurture a garden and watch it grow in its unique way. And so the parallel is that as parents and caregivers, we want to not worry so much about what our child will become and control the outcome of what our children will become, but we want to nurture their uniqueness and their individual differences and let them be who they're intended to be.
I love that. And then at the same time too, we had a lot of people that were, you know, working remotely, but we had some that were still here, and there was kind of like this disconnect. It was hard to build that community back. So I think at that same time, our former HR director had formed a DEI committee to where we could kind of talk and discuss, and sent a lot of the workforce through DEI training with the University of South Florida. And I was one of them. Can you tell us a little bit how you helped her plan that?
Yeah, so it was important to me that we have an organization that was sensitive and open to the differences that our organization brings. We have, I think at last count, approximately 150 staff. So with that brings a lot of differences and diversity. And I think DEI, or diversity, equity, and inclusion, It really is just about opening your mind to understand what your potential biases may be, whether it's from your own upbringing or maybe your own thoughts about a particular group, or thinking about how we can make sure that everyone on our team, regardless of who they are, feels included. So to be mindful of noticing when someone might not be joining in like they should be. Maybe someone is quiet or they're an introvert. And so we want to be sure to notice those things and pull people in. And so it's just, I felt it was really important that we have a leadership team and a specific group that focused on making sure that our organization was recognizing those things and that our leaders were being mindful of those nuances within their teams.
And what I liked about it too was it was a safe space to kind of be vulnerable and have some important discussions about, you know, maybe policies or things that might affect the work. They wanted some transparency from leaders, and I remember there being a lot of really important discussions about how those policies would affect our team. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, we have contracts in our work that we do with different government entities, and so It's important that we understand what is being required of us as an organization at the state level, and how do we operate and still be able to influence the system and bring our very important values into the work that we do. We don't want to necessarily change how people are doing things. We just want to make sure that we are. It's just about being compassionate and kind, and really being, regardless of who you are, what you bring to the table, like just noticing it and doing all that you can to bring others into the conversation.
Yeah, and I thought a lot of that, what I thought was interesting about that training too, was having some of the staff, because obviously when you have an organization, you have your leadership staff and then you have, you know, your supervisors, and then you have your coordinators or just your kind of staff that's working directly with the clients. And it was important in the DEI training that those staff, even at the lowest level, get the same type of opportunity to share their dreams and their, you know, wants and needs, or with even the highest level of leadership. And so I think that it kind of, it created a space where they could do that, because you were in the meetings, some of our board members were in the meetings, and anybody on our whole team could be part of those meetings. And we also had some that were very, you know, we had them all planned out, and there was an agenda, and there was different topics we were going to talk about. But we also had coffee and conversations where you could just drop in via Zoom, and those were a little more, you know, open, and you could just kind of talk to people.
Yeah, I mean, we, you know, for me as a mental health professional, I also want to make sure that, you know, I've used the word psychological safety, and I'll probably use it again before this podcast is over, but having our staff feel psychologically safe, meaning they can be who they are, they can say what's on their mind, and that they're not going to be judged for that. You know, we want everyone, and the group, the committee was formed with staff from all different departments. So, and at all different levels of, you know, within the organization, from those that are on the front lines to those that are in administration, making big decisions for the organization, human resources. So we had a lot of people in the room that had various roles. And it was really an opportunity, a great opportunity to hear different perspectives, because sometimes, you know, you get into your role and that's all you see. And it's like, wait a minute, we have lots of different people here that are doing different jobs. And it's really good to listen and take on the perspective of others. It's an essential life skill, actually, to be able to perspective take. We teach it to our young kids to really think about what someone else might be thinking or feeling. We teach that in our preschool. You know, when somebody takes something or takes a toy and the other kid wants it, you know, or they take it from them, we teach them like, oh, gee, I wonder how it felt when you took his toy. I bet he was sad. You know, we teach these things to young kids. And I think as adults, we forget, we get so caught up in our own experience of life, whether it be stress at home, stress at work, whatever, that we forget to take on the perspective of others. Sometimes it's mentally exhausting to do that, but we have to be intentional about wondering what someone else's perspective might be.
Speaking of mental exhaustion, we also have dabbled, and we are now doing a training on compassionate fatigue and preventing burnout in some of the more helping professions, which we do, which our focus, one of our big focuses, is mental health. How did you think that that's coming along? How are you helping to prevent burnout?
Right now is it's a tough time out there. It's tough for all, I think, all industries. And it's complicated. Staff are feeling burnt out. Definitely here at our organization, there's no doubt about it. It's not rainbows and butterflies out there. It's definitely a challenge. I'm hopeful. All we can do is be mindful that it exists and do what we can within our control to help staff feel supported. And we are doing all that we can to, you know, money is something that is talked about, but we know that money doesn't always mean someone's going to stay. Although, you know, in our current economic climate, money is really important because we know what the housing market looks like. So how can we increase salaries? How can we increase our leadership? Sometimes we need more supervisors. How can we create more benefits within the organization that you might not get elsewhere if you know, want to go work in a different industry? What can we do within our organization to help staff feel more supported within our control? And that's something that we're always thinking about. We actually had a conversation last week about that. So it's in process, it's ongoing, and I think it's just stressful times. It's to articulate or put into, you know, words, there's so many challenges on so many different levels.
I see what you're saying, and I know from you know, being a CEO, I'm sure it's probably different for someone like me. I see a lot of benefits with the job, and I could give you an example. For one is, like, you know, the flexible work hours. Mm-hmm. If you're a supervisor and you have someone who wants, you know, for self-care, they like to go to the gym. The gym starts, you know, at 4:45. They're supposed to leave at 4:30. Maybe they start leaving at 4:25 so they can make it to the gym so that they can still, you know, do their parenting duties, pick up their kids. But in doing so, they're getting more sleep. They're feeling better. They're not so tired the next day. And they're more productive. So are you, as an organization, really losing taking that into perspective?
For sure. I would agree with you. We have a very laid-back, flexible work culture here at the organization. And we want to do what we can to encourage staff to take care of themselves. And we allow supervisors the flexibility to be able to adjust staff schedule. We've implemented a hybrid work schedule for positions that qualify. Not every position qualifies for a hybrid work schedule, but we do offer a lot of flexibility, and staff wellness is really, really important to us. And we want staff to take care of themselves, for sure.
Another attribute, I think, of a healthy work environment is that staff feels comfortable being vulnerable and asking for support. And I mentioned earlier, we mentioned that we went through a major hurricane here in October. Can you tell us a little bit about how supervisors chose to mobilize and get those staff members supplies and in turn their clients?
Yeah, we have a very giving community, obviously, and so we were able to access a ton of resources from volunteers, a lot of donations from volunteers and our staff, and our staff reached out to their connections and their circles of influence, and we had a whole conference room full of items that one of our hard hit areas was DeSoto County, and we have staff that are out there that were literally in boats trying to get to their homes. So we literally put, I myself included, filled up our vehicles and literally just hauled everything, you know, that we could out to our staff. And it was just a beautiful thing. It really was. It was so nice to see. And for a few days, that's all we did. We really kind of, the actual work as we know it just kind of stopped. And we also had a ton of volunteers come out to the center in Sarasota and Northport and cleaned up. I mean, when I first showed up after the hurricane, it was a disaster zone. And literally within, I think, 1 to 2 days, it looked unbelievable. Aside from some trees that had fallen and some branches that stayed there for a few months, everything was cleaned up. Some of them helped to put our fence on our playground, get it back to, you know, upright because it had fallen. And so it was at least in good enough condition so the kids could still go out to play. So it was beautiful to see the volunteers and the outreach.
Was that a hard decision to make, to kind of put your daily tasks on the back burner? And was there any downside in doing that?
Well, I say that, you know, the business still had to run, to operate, you know, to some degree. But, and we still had clients that we were trying to reach and that needed help. But no, I mean, it never is wrong to do the right thing. So it always feels good to do the right thing regardless. And, you know, no one can fault you for that.
Right. And I'm sure those staff members really appreciated that support. Well, is there anything else that you'd like to add that maybe we didn't touch on about, you know, your perspective, your philosophies for creating a healthy work environment?
I think that, you know, as a leader, we have, we're obligated and I think it's essential that CEOs really, regardless of your background, even though I have a background in early childhood mental health, it might come a little more natural for me to take into consideration some of these concepts. It doesn't matter what your background is. It's really important to make sure that you're very intentional about how you how your leaders are and how they are with the people that you employ.
Well, that's really insightful, and thank you so much for being here today, Christy.
And thank you for having me.
Well, that's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Funding from Centering Kids comes from listeners like you. If you'd like to contribute, please donate to the Florida Center at www.thefloridacenter.org/donate. Don't forget to like and subscribe this podcast. Our next episode will air April 1st. Thanks for listening to today's episode of Centering Kids. You can visit the Florida Center for Early Childhood online at www.thefloridacenter.org to learn more and subscribe to this podcast. Have comments or suggestions for a show topic? Email us at podcast@thefloridacenter.org. Thanks again for joining us for Centering Kids, where early childhood experts give you tips and tools to help center children, foster their healthy development, and build stronger families.